Tons of talk all offseason long about the Phoenix Suns' pursuit of Kevin Durant, the DeAndre Ayton fiasco, Robert Sarver's investigation, but not enough attention paid to one big decision made by the Phoenix Suns to pay the luxury tax. We'll dive into why they did it, when they've done it before, and everything you need to know about that decision, plus much more on today's episode of Locked On Suns.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, and we are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past five seasons, and a writer at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. A big, big thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day. Make sure to find, if you're finding this show on your favorite podcast platform, hit follow or subscribe. Make sure you don't miss this show in your feed. And if you're finding us on YouTube, that's the best way to support the show. Hit subscribe down below. Drop me a comment telling me what you think the significance of the Suns paying the luxury tax might be, all right? Because I'm not sure people realize it all the way or really have settled into the significance of it. So we're going to dive into that to close out today's show, but I wanted to start with Kevin Durant updates because that is, look, that's driving force in the luxury tax situation, but it's also what everybody wants to talk about, and I do too. So, Zach Lowe, strange publication of a story of this kind of magnitude here. He wrote something on a Saturday about the Kevin Durant sweepstakes, specifically related to the Boston Celtics. And a few things here. So, one quote from the story: even before the Minnesota Timberwolves warped the trade market by flipping five draft assets for Rudy Gobert, several smart people around the league termed the very act of trading Durant, quote, impossible in conversations with ESPN. There was no way to approximate fair value. A player of Durant's caliber with so many years locked in had never become available. Okay. So we've talked about that plenty, right? The strange situation of not only the fact that Durant has those 4 years left on his deal, but also the fact that he is a player who has been injury prone lately and has significant injuries in his past between the foot a decade ago and now the Achilles. So that's been well worn, but it's worth considering. And I have some thoughts on the Gobert thing in a second. The second big update from Zach Lowe on Kevin Durant, and I'm just going to give you my thoughts on this. My main takeaway is, I'll get to it. The Nets are probably waiting, Zach Lowe wrote, for Durant's camp to realize that and maybe for Durant to retract his trade request. The Nets have not given up on this scenario, sources say. Okay, so let's talk about that. Those two things. Those were back-to-back paragraphs in the story. So Gobert screwed up the market, and therefore, the Nets are waiting for Durant to realize that there's no way to get fair value back for him, and therefore, that he should just come back because it's not possible to do a trade. Seems a little far-fetched, right? But let's just reiterate the, I guess, rarity of this situation, the uniqueness of this situation. So you go back to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar when he got traded to the Lakers, only one season left on his contract. Shaquille O'Neal, when he went from the Lakers to the Miami Heat, only 1 year left. More recently, Kawhi Leonard, only one season left on his contract when he went to the Raptors. Anthony Davis, a little bit different because there was this idea that he was going to be staying with the Lakers, so they went ahead and gave up more, but only one season left on his contract. And then I guess you could say James Harden, Kyrie Irving, those are a couple of examples where a player had 2 years left. I believe Paul George, when he went from the Pacers to the Thunder, I think may have had two seasons left also. But Harden, Kyrie, George aren't quite the caliber of player that we're talking about here. Not all-time greats, not franchise difference makers. You are an instantaneous contender if you get this player. That's not really what Harden or Kyrie are. So really, in this type of guy, you're getting one season of them. And then even if you feel confident like you did with Anthony Davis, you can never know the future for sure, so the negotiations are going to be a little bit different. The other part of this on the Gobert thing, and my main take right now as things stand, because you're starting to see this Gobert thing pop up. Oh, the NBA screwed up. The Jazz screwed up the NBA market, or the Wolves screwed it up, probably more accurately. They seemed like the ones who were most desperate there. I think it's all ridiculous. I think the NBA should not care about this. And if anything, I think all the Gobert trade did, when you think about the Durant talks or the Donovan Mitchell talks or any trade that happens between now and next year's deadline for a star player, all that it did was add time. It only made things longer, because what it did is it allowed the Brooklyn Nets, it allowed Sean Marks to go out and say, well, did you just see what the Wolves gave up for Gobert? Yeah, you're not getting Kevin Durant for anything less than that, and it's going to actually take you a lot more because we happen to think Durant's a lot better than Gobert, right? Sure, he can say that, but all that it did was add time. He can't actually believe that, or Sean Marks cannot realistically go to the Suns, the Celtics, the Miami Heat, whomever it might be that they're negotiating with about Kevin Durant and say, you need to give me what the Wolves gave up for Gobert. Because look, the Wolves were desperate. The Wolves have a new owner. They have an upward trajectory as a franchise. And they also have a pathetic, frankly, track record as a franchise in terms of winning over the past 20 or so seasons since they gave up Kevin Garnett. Those circumstances are unique to them, and they also botched it to a degree. I think getting Gobert is a smart thing for them to do. They clearly gave up more than is reasonable in the market. So if Marks wants to hold Kevin Durant hostage because he can't find someone as desperate as the Wolves were with Rudy Gobert, then the rest of the NBA can go ahead and leak that. If these talks get cut off because Sean Marks wants as more than what was traded for Rudy Gobert, then what Sean Marks can do is get laughed at when all of the general managers who were pursuing Durant call up Adrian Wojnarowski, Shams Charania, Brian Windhorst, Jake Fisher, whomever it might be, Chris Haynes, and say, guess what just happened? Sean Marks decided to take his grumpy superstar into camp without trading him because he couldn't give up on his pipe dream of wanting more than what the Wolves sillily, ridiculously gave up for Rudy Gobert, okay? The last thing on Lowe's story is, quote, do we know for sure, he's asking a hypothetical question, do we know for sure Phoenix has offered or will offer the best that it can do for now? Mikal Bridges, Cameron Johnson, 4 unprotected first round picks and 3 swaps. Now, if you listened to my show last week with Kellen Olsen when the Celtics stuff first dropped, you'll know how I feel about this, but I think that it's worth bringing up. First of all, Lowe is just kind of the latest guy to regurgitate that the Nets might keep Durant, so I don't buy that. That would be one aspect of why the talks might have quieted down, and I think people are wondering, well, did the Suns offer their best and the Nets said no to it? And that's why maybe the talks have quieted down. I don't think so. I think the Suns have almost certainly not offered that Bridges, Johnson, 4 firsts, 3 swaps package, because here is what would be happening right now if they did offer that. Kevin Durant would either be a Phoenix Sun, or we would have already heard that the Suns are out of it. Kellen has been making this point on the radio. He made it on this show, and I agree with him 100%. We're in this unique spot where we know what the Suns' Godfather offer is. It's going to be some variation of that, right? If they're going to get Durant at this point. Maybe there's 3 or 4 teams involved, but those are going to be the general grouping of things that they give up to get Durant. Whereas the Raptors have different potential options. The Celtics, it could be Smart, it could be White. They could do 2 picks. They probably would never do 4. There's all these variables there. There's no longer variables with the Suns. So if they had offered that, the Nets would have either agreed and Kevin Durant would be giving a press conference this week introducing himself as a Sun, or Woj or somebody would have reported the Suns are out of the Kevin Durant talks because they got their best offer turned down, right? Those are the only versions there. I don't see a world where somehow the Suns have actually been cut loose in these negotiations and nobody knows about it. That doesn't make any sense to me. So I do not buy that. I think the Suns are still in it. And I think Sean Marks would be silly to hold out on all of this just so that he can look good by getting more than Danny Ainge did for Rudy Gobert. This is silly, spitting contest stuff, and I just don't think it's realistic. Now, the Celtics are a major contender to get Durant. I am not negating any of that. But this secondary stuff, I just think it's all continuing to be negotiating in public, negotiating via leak. And it might play a role eventually, but right now, I just think it's talk. The Suns go into the season with the roster mostly as is, and this does come to pass, whether they don't get Durant or the Nets choose not to trade Durant, they will need Cam Johnson to step up. And I'll sift through comments that Cam made to the media over the weekend at his basketball camp next. But first, today's show, guys, brought to you by Built Bar. I just picked up. This is the embarrassing part where I say I still have mail sent to my parents' house and I show my age, but I had a delicious pack of Built Bar S'more Puffs waiting for me at their house to try and tell you all about. Cannot recommend those enough, but they already beat me to the punch. Built already beat me to the punch. Cookie dough chunk puffs are here. A light, chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks, and of course, like every Built Bar, covered in 100% chocolate. Cookie dough chunk puffs are only 160 calories and have a whopping 15 grams of protein in each one. Like all Built Bars, the new cookie dough chunk puff is covered in 100% real chocolate. That means they're healthy and tasty. Chocolate-covered cookie dough with a light, fluffy texture like all Built Puffs have. So, so good. Collagen, protein, everything. Whether you need a bite before or after a workout, maybe between meals, maybe late at night to just ditch the candy urge, Built Bar is your way to go. And the cookie dough chunk puff is just the latest delicious delicacy that they have offered. Go to built.com, promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order, whether that is the cookie dough chunk puff or your personal favorite. Again, promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. Cam Johnson spoke to all the media for a bit this weekend. I was not there, but anyone who was, and then he gave an one-on-one interview to Dwayne Rankin of the Arizona Republic, of course, the beat writer over there. And I wanted to just go through some of the main highlights and tell you what it means, because Cam is always pretty open and honest, but he was even more so this time around. He spoke about the Kevin Durant rumors and then on the development of his individual game. Those are the main areas that I want to dig into. So on the Kevin Durant note, he said, quote, he's talking about how he was sitting on the couch with his brother and then heard the TV reports come on about Kevin Durant. And he said, quote, he's Windhorst, is naming DA, me, Mikhail. And I was like, come on, man, but it's the business. Like I said, it's the business. If that's something that gets done, then that was just part of God's plan and you've got to keep on rolling. Cam continued, but like I said, you've got to expect a team to do what's in their best interests and try to win a championship. And then on the flip side, we as players have got to do what's in our best interest to further our careers and try to be our best selves, right? So not necessarily surprising, but it's one of those things where athletes don't often talk about that stuff. They don't usually, like, for example, this weekend, leading into the weekend, we also heard from Kyler Murray on his contract situation, right? And he's giving this blaze of anger, and rightly so. I think it was disrespectful, that contract clause, and it was correct to be taken out. But then at one point, he gets asked about something like, did you hear about X media reaction or criticism? And then he says no. Right? You're lying, Kyler Murray, right? And like, athletes do that. So for Cam to say something about, yes, here, I'll paint the exact picture for you of when I heard about the Kevin Durant rumors. You know, normally these guys will reference these things in vagaries. Yeah, you know, with all the noise out there, etc. It's like, dude, we know what you're talking about. You know what you're talking about. Just say it. Just be a person. And so I appreciate that. But that type of human collateral, if you want to call it that, the human cost of this whole process, that's what's always Once the Kevin Durant talks dragged on past a week or two, the human cost was always what was going to get somebody to flinch, right? Well, I guess it was the Donovan Mitchell. I think that changed things a little bit. There's these other dominoes, but if you're talking about will the Nets wait until training camp, can the Suns afford to go into the season with basically running back a roster that got blown out in a game seven, all that stuff, the human cost is what starts to weigh on everybody. You know, the Suns have a cloud right now over Mikhail, Cam. We've heard even Jay Crowder has made comments on Twitter about everybody talking about the Suns' need to improve at the four spot, and he was not so subtly probably referring to Kevin Durant, right? Plus, all these other end-of-the-roster players who maybe aren't going to, you know, make or break a trade, but they're in limbo right now. You've seen video that even the Suns' own social channels have been posting photos and videos of campaign in the practice facility lately. You've seen, if you follow Torrey Craig on Instagram, his story is full of being with his son at the facility all the time. Like, these guys are having to continue to go about their lives, and as this stretches from weeks into months, it just is a little stressful, if not creating tension between themselves and the coaching staff in the front office, right? And then on Brooklyn's side, you have the same thing. I would argue significantly more huge for them, right? Like, Sean Marks, Steve Nash, Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, the four core people aside from Durant in that organization, their entire franchise might be overhauled if and when they finally trade Kevin Durant, right? So letting this go till camp or longer is just when things start to get really ugly. And again, to return to the Sean Marks thing, if he wants to go through all of that because he wants to look good and say, I got more for Durant than the Jazz got for Gobert, then he can, you know, be my guest and do that. But I don't buy that that's tenable. And it's not tenable for the Suns either. So they need to get to offering some better stuff too, because I just don't think it's in the best interest of any party right now. Cam also spoke on developing his own game, growing his own game as a player. And I thought he had some really interesting stuff to say there too. Quote, being somebody that can be relied on as a scorer and creator is what he's working on. Not just somebody that relies on other people to get their buckets. I think it takes a balance. In the NBA world, only one person can be holding the ball all the time. So you have to find ways to be very good at being effective without having the ball in your hands. But in addition to that, I want to be somebody that can be relied upon to score, to create, to use ball screens, and to bring the ball up the court. He also added that Mikhail has been focusing on the same, which we've seen a little bit more of that from Mikhail, less so from Cam. So both is interesting, Cam more so. First of all, just a big kudos to Cam for talking up his own development ahead of a potential trade. Because, well, and in addition to the extension, even if it was in Phoenix, but especially knowing he still wants an extension if it's not from the Suns. If he's in Brooklyn, if he's somewhere else in a third or fourth team in this trade, he still wants money, right? He still wants to lock in that extension. So getting out with the media of, hey, I'm improving. I've been working. That's smart. So just tip of the hat to him. Savvy stuff with the media. But let's get into some of the numbers. So Cam, over the 3 years of his career, unassisted made baskets. What percentage of his made baskets came unassisted, right? Rookie season, 10.8%. It's never been dramatically high, right? He's not that type of player, as he said in that quote. But 10.8% as a rookie went way down to 7.9% his second season. That was just a year, the final season, where all the offense ran through Chris Paul. So a lot of guys' creation numbers kind of went down that season. And then last year, career high, 14.7%. So almost a 5 percentage point increase from his rookie season to last season. That's just impressive in general. To improve like that without necessarily having the means. Like, they were not running offense for Cam, but he still found ways, taking the ball up himself in transition, for instance, or, you know, running a quick pick and roll early in the clock, things like that. He's just found ways to do it. And now if it's actually going to be an emphasis and Monty and the coaching staff is bought into that, you could see that number get even higher. Some other trends. About a third of Cam's shots last season came from the floater or layup range, up to 35% in the playoffs. He's a player, I've talked about this before, who both playoffs now, he has increased his at-rim frequency compared to the regular season. Usually you see the opposite, right? Because buckets are harder to get, guys have the ball in their role players have the ball in their hands less. So sometimes, a lot of the time, guys who get to the basket consistently in the regular season, it's just harder in the playoffs and that number goes down. So for Cam to have it go up, even as a role player, even as you see some of those unassisted numbers, not all dunks and layups are going to always be assisted. So some unassisted, a lot of them are going to be assisted if he's cutting, if he's, you know, coming off a screen and getting to the basket, whatever. But that's really promising. He's incredibly efficient at the rim. He's decent from floater range. His shooting foul rate is increasing over time as well. And he's entering his age 26 season. So like he should be getting into the prime of his career physically, developmentally, reading the game, IQ, all that stuff. The only thing that I guess you could describe as, I don't even think it is a negative already, but it's a concern, is if he takes on more responsibility, both if he maybe becomes the starter this season if Durant's not here, if he is playing with Durant, whatever it might be, and he's more of like a sixth man creator, who knows? There's all these varieties of options, right? No matter what, if he's doing more on the court and trying to play more minutes in a bigger role, the injuries and the health matter. He's only played 183 out of 227 games in his career, which is about 81%, but if you look at it more year by year, he's missed pretty big chunks of each season. I think he missed about 15 or so games each year to add up to about 44 total. The hip problems are clearly behind him, but he just still needs to prove that he can stay healthy and take on a big load over a full season. Cam has a lot on his plate, but the Suns could have even more if they extend him. That contract extension is still looming, of course, now that they've chosen to go into the luxury tax. Let's discuss the most underrated part of the Suns' offseason activity next, but first, a quick break. Let's break down the numbers here real quick. The Suns' current tax situation. I don't think it's been getting enough attention, as I said, and I think it's actually really indicative of what they might do going forward if we just look at the finances, okay? So, right now they are $11.1 million into the luxury tax before they've used the taxpayer mid-level. They don't have to use that, but they haven't yet. They might use it on, we've talked about on this show a lot, Dennis Schroeder, right? If they wanted to pay Schroeder a little more than the minimum, they could use that mid-level, taxpayer mid-level, up to $6.5 million. So that could increase it. Obviously, a Kevin Durant trade could increase it, but that's where they sit right now, $11.1 million. Now, a tax payment is $1.50 per dollar. So being $11.1 million into the luxury tax as an NBA team means that your bill is about $16 million. All right? So that's where they sit right now. With Kevin Durant in, and let's say it's the mother load. Let's say the Nets just really get the Suns to offer everything. They accept the Suns' offer, and that's where it goes. So let's say it's Mikhail, Cam, and Crowder in terms of players going out. The Suns, and you bring in Durant. The Suns are $27 million into the tax this season in that situation. Again, prior to, that's not including if they were to go sign somebody like Schroeder or make a separate trade that were to bring in more salary potentially. There's obviously all these other things that could still happen. But even with just that move, $27 million, which again, 1.5 times that, you're getting to about a $40 million tax payment that Robert Sarver would have to cut a check for. And if that Kevin Durant trade happens, just looking a little bit forward, you're already locking in an $8.2 million into the tax next season with only six contracts on the books, okay? And again, the tax rate gets higher in the NBA if teams are more than $10 million over. So I actually was underselling what their bill would be with that $27 million. It'd be higher than $40, all right? So that's where they are right now and what they would be at in the event of a Kevin Durant trade. And you also have to remember, they're trying to trade for KD without giving up Mikhail is what it seems like. So they might even be in for a bigger payment if they kept Mikhail and Durant and gave up smaller contracts to get to Durant's salary in a trade, right? This is the massive amounts of money that the Suns are looking at. Let's go back in history a little bit, okay? Because I think this part, as much as the current tax stuff is getting underrated, I think the Suns, like, quote-unquote, Robert Sarver's, like, refusal to go into the tax is a little bit overrated. And I've talked about this most of the summer, but I think it's worth reiterating. And I want to give a hat tip shout-out to Mark Deeks at Forbes. He has a chart that you can find in an article where it goes through every team's tax payment from 2002 until now, I think. So there were three seasons in a row, and I believe this was before the repeater tax existed in the NBA. There's now a higher level you pay if you're in the tax multiple seasons, but they were in the tax 3 years in a row. $3.8 million payment in 2008, and then a $4.9 million payment in both 2009 and 2010. That repeater tax now, if they were to continue it, is $2.50 per dollar spent over the tax line. So, also those thresholds are still in place, right? So I said the tax rate's higher if you're more than $10 million. I think it's like more than five is one, more than 10 is another level, more than 15, it goes up by increments of five. So you're talking about if the Suns were to trade for Durant and they're already locking themselves into being $8.2 million into the tax next season with only those six contracts on the books and that repeater tax in effect, and they're probably going to get over into that $10 or $15 million increased range, you're talking about an enormous amount of money, like $50-plus million of just payment of a bill, basically, not toward the roster. That doesn't include the hundreds of millions that they would be paying for the actual players still, just the tax bill. So what next? What can we foresee with all of that in place? I think if the Suns are still in KD talks after signing Ayton, it means they're okay paying that repeater tax, right? It means they're okay being on the high side of that threshold. Like, that's just worth acknowledging, because you hear all this talk about Sarver won't, Sarver won't, Sarver won't. I just told you he did it three times. Those bills were very tiny. I understand that. But if they are still pursuing Durant and they match that offer to Ayton, there's no way around it. They are accepting the possibility of a massive bill of tens of millions of dollars, okay? Now, to get back to Cam Johnson a little bit, even without Kevin Durant, if you just say all the roster is basically the same and you lock in a four-year, $80 million just to pull a number out of a hat extension for Cam Johnson, that even by itself also puts the Suns into the tax next season in 2023-24, the season after this one, because that's when his extension kicks in. So either way, the Suns are headed toward not only being in the tax, likely being on the high end of it, and being in the repeater tax, even if they don't trade for Kevin Durant, all right? So if I'm reading the tea leaves, looking in my crystal ball, that could mean the Suns explore Ayton trades again after January 15th when he's eligible to be traded again. It could mean that they look to potentially waive Chris Paul and or Cameron Payne, and I believe even Landry Shamet is one of the upcoming season. His contract is partially or non-guaranteed. They did this last summer when they signed these guys' contracts. All three of those players who got new deals last summer from the Suns, Payne, Paul, Shamet, have partial or non-guarantees at the ends of their contracts. So if you were to waive, let's say, Cameron Payne and Chris Paul, not necessarily smart. I think Chris Paul will still have a lot left in the tank in 2023-24, maybe in a smaller role, but still effective. That gets the Suns out of the tax, but they would still only have four or five players. So you're probably getting back into the tax. Maybe it's on the low end, but it's hard to avoid. It's hard to avoid when you have Ayton on a max, Durant on his max, a big, huge contract. I don't know if it's officially the max he could have gotten, but it is a huge contract. And then Book having that super max eventually kicks in as well. But even now, he's on a max of its own. Committing to a Durant deal or a Johnson extension means paying that repeater tax and potentially that escalated payment to fill out a championship roster. There's just really no way around that. You can do the waiving. You can try to trade Ayton. It's just really hard to get out from underneath it once you've decided to go forward. That is unprecedented for the Suns and for Sarver. It's not getting enough attention. But the Suns' moves this summer show it's a real possibility in Phoenix going forward. They are basically locking themselves into it. And that is important. It's important because it's, you know, unprecedented. It's also important because that's what you want your team to do, right? I'm sure Suns fans listening are like, thank God, after all this time, we're finally getting a payment for a roster that can win. That's all you want as a sports fan. And that's big. I don't know what it means. We know the investigation and who's calling the shots and this and that. We've had plenty of those conversations. But the owner committing to paying for a roster and even agreeing to explore opportunities to get even more expensive, you got to give a round of applause to the front office for doing that, no matter, I guess, what else is going on around it. So just think about all of these numbers as we go forward into the summer, because no matter what moves they make, no matter if they do the trade or then they just do the extension or they do this other smaller trade, like, just be thinking about it in terms of the tax, because it's big time money and a big time commitment. That'll do it for today, guys. We are only three times a week in August. So what that means is we will be here Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays for you throughout the month of August. Aaron Edwards will still be joining, and I'm going to be bringing on guests throughout the month to fill in the gap. So I have one really exciting one. A Sun social media influencer will be joining me next week. I might have reporters, local personalities, hosts. We'll see. Maybe people from the Suns even? I don't know. I don't want to make any promises, but that's the deal going forward. So keep it right here. Hit follow or subscribe. Make sure you don't miss us. And I will talk to you all on Wednesday.